It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 122 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? I have one of the most Canada stories that you'll hear today. At 6:15, it is the first of a two-segment chat with Justin Wells of Inside Texas on the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals and the strange story of Jaden Rashada. In a mere seconds, a look at the sports headlines includes the NFL considering some major moves and the Big 12 and ACC signing an agreement to that NCAA antitrust suit settlement. Way to fall in line, guys. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. Well, we are fully in the throes of the sports offseason right now. Sometimes it's a struggle to find relevant stories, but here we go. There's always some football to talk, right? And we're going to start today's sports talk in the NFL, where there are reports out there now, according to Adam Schefter and others, that the NFL is considering a handful of things in the not-too-distant future. More streaming, which shouldn't come as a surprise. We've seen an increase in that year over year over the last few years now. Peacock, soon to be Netflix, likely others. Amazon Prime, of course, has that Thursday night game. Well, the 18-game schedule is inevitable, as anybody who saw this league go from 17 or 16 to 17 knew. 17 is kind of a weird number. Yeah, let's go ahead and push that to 18. But how about this one? With as much as you hear players and coaches rightfully griping about how much the international games throw things off, according to Adam Schefter, quote, I think we're going to eventually have one international game for every team per year. Could be in South America, could be in Europe. Might we have games in Asia or in the Middle East? Well, stay tuned to find out. And for any time you hear the league claim that it cares about the health and safety of its players, just know that it cares about money just a little bit more. Now, as far as one potential on-field change is concerned, I'm actually a big fan of this one, because the NFL is preparing to test optical tracking for line to gain rulings in the preseason, with a chance for it to be fully implemented for the 2024 regular season. Why have we not done this yet? Why are we still relying on old guys who look like zebras wearing white hats, accurately gauging whether or not something is being marked a first down? This is so much simpler. We have the technology to do so. There's no need to, I don't know, are football purists even arguing against this at this point? We want to make sure that this judgment is done correctly, and by the way, that it maybe speeds things up a little bit more. We don't need to take the extra 2 to 3 to 4 minutes to measure whether a first down is had if we have the technology to help us know a lot faster. And so the NFL is likely going to be implementing this at some point in 2024 after testing it in the preseason. Good job, guys. Way to go. I have no problem hammering you when you do something wrong, when you do something right, including something that seems pretty obvious to me and a lot of other people. Well, I guess I'll give you a little bit of credit for that too. We are a day away from a settlement needing to be reached in the House versus NCAA antitrust suit or cases. And a couple of the Power Five conferences who are listed along with the NCAA as defendants have agreed to the settlement. That would be the Big 12 first, This technically happened yesterday, followed shortly after by the ACC. Nobody should be surprised by this, that these two conferences were the first to sign up to agree to this, even though you can make the argument that it hampers them even more in their attempts to stick with the SEC and Big Ten. The ACC presidents voted in person in Charlotte at their meetings last night. And Big 12 presidents and chancellors actually voted virtually on Tuesday afternoon. And it was unanimous, their approval in doing so. And for those of you wondering, Texas and Oklahoma abstained from voting, which is strange because everybody says this is inevitable that is going to receive unanimous support. So why wouldn't Texas and Oklahoma just go ahead and cast their votes? Maybe it's because they weren't necessary. I don't know. Or maybe the SEC and Big Ten are going to pull a fast one on everybody else and leave them holding the bag. That's probably not going to happen, but boy, wouldn't that be fun? Wouldn't that be a fun little curveball on this whole thing? This settlement, which answers some questions, I guess. There's a lot of posturing happening on the NCAA side and them claiming that if this is allowed to go to trial, that all hell is going to break loose, college sports is going to come to an end. You know, the normal stuff that they say when they are resisting inevitable change. But maybe that'll be the case. Or maybe the SEC and Big Ten say, you know what, NCAA, you really screwed this one up. We're actually going to break off on our own here in the next couple of years. You can go ahead and file for bankruptcy. We don't want any part of this. Is that going to happen? No, probably not. But again, I can hope, right? I want chaos. I don't want anarchy necessarily, but I want the NCAA the hell out of my team's affairs. Certainly in college football, where the NCAA barely has any sort of hold, I guess they do still make decisions on eligibility. They're trying to arbitrarily enforce that once again after allowing a free-for-all a few years ago incited by COVID. But the less the NCAA is involved in college sports going forward, yes, even basketball and baseball and softball and the Olympic sports, the better off college games are going to be. The issues that will still remain after this settlement is reached by tomorrow, assuming it is reached by tomorrow, does include colleges being able to pay their student athletes upwards of $22 million per year spread across all sports. You can also offer full rides in whatever sport you want to, but these things do have to still meet Title IX standards. So in theory, if your female populace, the female percentage of your student base is 55%, according to those who know a lot more about the legality of all of this than I do, 55% of that $22 million does have to be spent on female athletes. This is why I can't help but to wonder if college football breaks away from all the other college sports, because how does that make sense? You're not going to be able to make that math work unless you're just going to really load up on NIL deals through the school, which at that point, why are we doing any of this? This is more posturing. It's more BS. It's more putting up fronts when the reality is something much different. That's how this organization has operated for far too long. There's too much of the under the table thing happening right now. I'm going to talk about this with Justin Wells here in a couple of segments. Jaden Rashada exposed something that we knew was going on really from the moment that NIL was allowed. And that is these kids being paid to go to a school or to transfer from one school to another, a lump sum payment. In Jordan Rashada's case, Miami was going to pay him more than $8 million per year, but then Florida topped that offer and got near $14 million, including an immediate payment of $1 million as soon as he signed his letter of intent. But that's for a couple of segments. For now, the NFL doing some things. College sports may be doing some things. Of course, we will let you know tomorrow if and when that happens. I'm planning on getting somebody on the show, not sure who just yet, but stay tuned on that one. All right, coming up, it is the first of my two-segment conversation with Justin Wells of Inside Texas here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Well, it is Wednesday. That means I have the opportunity to speak for a couple of segments with one of the best in the business. It is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, and the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time. How you doing today?
Hey now. Hey, I'm getting in where I fit in. How's your world, Trey?
My world is good, but as somebody who has shunned the NBA as of a few years ago, I'm not nearly as good as you are. Your Dallas Mavericks make it back to the Western Conference Finals. There were some people that predicted that they could get this far, and sure enough, here we are. They knocked off the Oklahoma City Thunder last round, and the Mavs have a chance to play for another championship if they can get past the Minnesota Timberwolves in the Western Conference Finals. How good are you feeling about your Mavs right now, man?
I got to tell you, Trey, there's some excitement here in the Wells house. We're fired up. You know, my son is probably the biggest Luka Doncic fan in the world. And so, and Kyrie Irving having his best year in his career, he's getting older, he's maturing, playing at such a high level. It's fun to watch this group. And, you know, Dallas doesn't do a lot of drafting. They're usually involved with trades, but Derek Lively, Jaden Hardy, Josh Green, those are all guys Dallas picked and drafted and developed. So you're seeing some of that work from the inside, making those trades right before the deadline. PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, those were huge. The Derrick Jones Jr. signing in the offseason went under the radar. That was huge. But ultimately, I think Kyrie and Luka working together, both of them have a humbleness to them. Both of them are confident, but they don't have to be the man. Neither one of them have an ego that will trump the other. And that's when you win big. Those two, that's the best dynamic duo in the NBA right now. They're so much fun to watch. And I think Jason Kidd's a great coach. There's times I wish he'd call a timeout on 11-0 runs or when things are going south pretty quick. But to handle personalities like Luka and Kyrie, Kidd might be one of the only ones that really understands how to do that, how to mesh and get those guys on the same page. And again, they put their egos to the side. It's all about, doesn't matter who takes the last shot. All that matters is who takes the winning shot. And, you know, by knocking off OKC, that was a couple of free throws from PJ Washington. And so we're excited. We like it. I think it's fun. Listen, Minnesota is one of the best teams in the league. Like Minnesota, I've said this for a few years, Anthony Edwards is the future. Like Luka Doncic might be one of the best players on the planet, Kyrie as well. But listen, Anthony Edwards is going to take that crown at some point. He is just ferocious. His game has developed so much over the last few years when he came out of Georgia. Carl Anthony Towns might be one of the biggest, best big men scorers, shooters in the game. Rudy Gobert is your defensive player of the year. Jaden McDaniels is an all-defensive guy that does a lot of good things. I think this series is going to be great basketball. I could see a 6 or 7-game series between these guys. And so I think it's good basketball, and it's good for the NBA because it's not the Golden State Warriors, and it's not the over-coverage of the very mediocre average Los Angeles Lakers. It's that new blood coming up that's bringing in new – it's kind of like with Caitlin Clark in the WNBA. It's that new, fresh, new car smell kind of guys coming up. And don't forget, Luke is only 25 years old. And so this is their second Western Conference Finals in 3 years. And so I think we're excited. We're having fun with it. We're watching each one of them. We watched Indiana and Boston last night. That was a great first game in that series. I think Boston's going to wind up taking that one, but Indiana is legit. Tyrese Halliburton is playing at another level. Miles Turner, this is 9th year in the league. I'm watching him last night, and I'm thinking, I remember covering him at Texas when they barely played him. And now he was, you know, doing all-star stuff in Indiana, and so it's always fun to see Miles Turner do well. But my big takeaway was I talked to a buddy last night. I think the winner of Dallas and Minnesota might win the finals. I don't know if Boston and Indiana have the defensive fortitude that Dallas and Minnesota have. And Minnesota's a great defensive team. Dallas has gotten progressively better on defense in the last 3 months. Remember, they finished the regular season 15-2. So Dallas was clicking on all cylinders at the right time. And don't be surprised if they lose game one. tonight. Don't be surprised because they lost game one against the Clippers and they lost game one against OKC. And I got a buddy that tells me game one Mavs is always a loss and then they always recoup and come back for the rest of them. But ultimately, I think it's going to be a great series. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be a team from the Western Conference Finals in the NBA Finals that not many people predicted. Do not tell me there were a ton of people that thought Dallas or Minnesota were going to the finals at the beginning of the season. That was not on everyone's mind. But we're seeing the emergence of Anthony Edwards. We're seeing Luka Doncic really putting himself on a global scale and Kyrie Irving having the best year of his career. Listen, there is not a better ball handler in basketball maybe in the last 30 or 40 years. His skill set is unreal, unmatched. And you can knock Kyrie for all the immature things he may have said in his 20s. He is a family man now in his 30s with a clear case of focus in what he wants to do, and that's helping Luka and the Mavs get back to the finals.
I was just about to ask you about that because the talent has always been there for him, but he's been a bit of a distraction in the locker room. I mean, that was one of the reasons why he ended up finding his way out of Boston, and obviously he had his issues with LeBron and Cleveland even after winning a championship there. So you think it's just merely as simple as him being more of a family man now, so he's putting his ego to the side in the name of helping the team to be better?
I absolutely think it's that. You know, I've got a couple of buddies that are actually on the Mavs beat, and you know, I don't know if that trade works 5 or 6 years ago.
No.
Before the Brooklyn Nets and maybe even pre-Boston. I don't know if that trade works, and especially with Luka coming in as young as he was. And so I think it took time for these guys to grow. You and I can relate. In our 20s, we were knuckleheads. In our 30s, we were slightly less knuckleheads. And so Kyrie's got two small kids. I think the whole fatherhood has been good to him. Luka is now a father now, and I think that's something they actually talk about a lot and they share. And so it sometimes it's just about getting a little bit older, a little bit more mature. And you got to understand, you know, I was listening to a podcast this morning, taking my son to football camp, and Kevin Garnett came on there and he said, you know, about Kyrie, you got to understand he has some Kobe Bryant tendencies. He's always calm. He's incredibly confident. You don't fluster him. You never see it on his face. And he's got kind of that calming to him. And I think Luka needed that. Because Luka's got a problem with referees. He's one of those little league dads sometimes, and he won't shut up. And I love Dirk Nowitzki calling him out in that game six against OKC. I mean, Dirk walked over and flat out told him, you need to shut up. You need to play. And when Dirk says something, you listen. And so Luka's matured. Kyrie's matured. And I don't know if these two mix and match 5 years ago, but today, timing as and life is everything. I think it's setting up for a nice little series and a potential run.
So what does Dallas need to do to knock off a T-Wolves team that they themselves just knocked off the defending champ Denver Nuggets?
They're going to have to get – I know this sounds silly. They're going to have to get more from Kyrie and Luka. Mm-hmm. And the problem there is those two played really well in the OKC series, but it was the other complementary parts that were big. You know, Derek Jones Jr. scoring 22 in the last game. P.J. Washington, you know, having three games of 25 points, 15, 10, 15 rebounds. Derek Lively, the Lively game coming out in game six. You know, the youngest player in NBA history to record 15 rebounds in a playoff game. You know, it was the sum of all the parts. Luka and Kyrie are going to have to take some bigger shots in the fourth quarter. And I think those two guys are more than prepared to do that. They've done it before. They'll do it again. But listen, Minnesota's defense is intense. Denver had every right to put them away, and Minnesota was relentless. And I think that starting five is better than Dallas's, top to bottom. I think Luka and Kyrie are better, but I think Minnesota's got a better team, Trey. And so for them to knock them off, they're going to have to hit some shots in the lane around those towers. You know, getting a shot off against OKC wasn't that tough. Their bigs aren't that great. Same thing with the Thunder. Their defensive bigs weren't great. Jaden McDaniel and Rudy Gobert will put your stuff in the stands. And I think that, to me, is going to be the biggest key. Kyrie and Luka have got to step it up a little bit more. They're going to have to hit some bigger shots. The complimentary stuff is always going to have to follow suit. You don't win one without them. But I think we're going to have to see a little bit more clutch Kyrie in the fourth, which he is completely clutch. He is phenomenal. And when Luka's not griping at referees, Luka Doncic might be the best player on the planet. And so for me, that those two things have to happen or Minnesota's going to their first finals.
Who defends Edwards?
Oh, probably I was not Tim Hardaway Jr. Derek Jones Jr. is going to get a little bit of that.
Okay.
He's a good defender, not a great one. You know, Edwards is just a mismatch because he is long. I want to say he's 6'7", and he can shoot it. He's improved his shot so much since he got in the NBA. I feel like I'm missing a guy, but you know, it's. I think they're going to do some switching. They're going to have a multitude of different guys. Tim Hardaway Jr. can guard him for a few series. You know, Derek Jones is going to get his shot with him. I honestly think it's going to come down to help side. Who's going to help when Edwards takes guys off the dribble? Because that's what they did with OKC. They packed the lane and they let those guys shoot threes. They even left Josh Giddey wide open. They left Lou Dort wide open because they knew the other guys were going to beat them. With Minnesota, they're going to have to do the same thing. They're going to have to really pack it in with Anthony Edwards because he's a driver. He's a guy that creates his own shot. And they're going to have to force those guys like Mike Conley and those guys to hit those shots on the outside. And so I don't know if there's one guy that's going to guard Edwards. I think it's going to be a group effort there. And even that's going to be tough. He is playing at just another level right now. And Anthony Edwards might be the most fun basketball player to watch in the NBA right now.
Yeah, the important aspect to all of that may be shutting those other guys down, letting Edwards do his thing, but trying to keep some of those secondary guys from doing their thing as well. It's crazy to think that DFW teams have a chance to win three straight championships in the sports calendar with the Mavs in the conference finals, the Stars in the conference finals as a one seed. Now the Cowboys just need to do their job, but we're not holding our breath on that one. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Joining me for a couple of segments today to talk sports. We will get into college football on the other side, namely Jaden Rashada, that whole saga with Florida. Let me get Justin's thoughts on that and more here on Sports Day Plus.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back with Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. You can follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show, typically on Wednesdays for a couple of segments. And Justin, turning our attention now to college football, I don't know if we're going to end up talking a whole lot of a specific Longhorn football today, but the big story in college sports right now, well, there's a couple, but as far as the college football side of things, it is the lawsuit that has been filed by former five-star QB Jaden Rashada and his family. Played at Arizona State last year. He's actually a member of the Georgia Bulldogs now. Well, he was initially committed to Miami and then the University of Florida, and now his family is suing the University of Florida, namely head coach Billy Napier and a couple of boosters for reneging on a promised nearly $14 million to sign with Florida, which he initially did. What a mess this is for the Florida Gators and I think college football on the whole.
I had a major college coach tell me a few years ago that this recruitment, the Jaden Rashada recruitment, will cost Billy Napier his job. You hate hearing stuff like that, somebody's livelihood. But that's how bad that recruitment was. That's how slimy and cringy that recruitment was. You know, this is the dark side of NIL.
Yeah.
NIL was always envisioned, you know, name, image, and likeness to let guys profit off their own face, their own brand. Watch themselves on College Football 25 on PlayStation. That's what they wanted to do ultimately. This is the dark side. And this is where, because I think both are in the wrong. You know, it's one of those things where if you're throwing out numbers like that, and remember when this started happening, the rules were kind of open-ended. It was kind of the wild, wild west. It was sort of, let's just get in where we fit in. Let's just figure things out as long as we go. And so, you know, Rashada's what, on his third program in 2 years? And when you have recruitments that involve that sum of money, a lot of times those players are going to jump ship and go to the next check and then go to the next check. You know, I don't know if Florida was in the wrong in any sense. I don't know the legal side of it or the Rashadas for that matter. All I do know is that recruitment smelt like a skunk slaughtered on I-20. Like, that one was bad from the start. Everything around it was bad. I feel awful for the Florida staff having to deal with it. And to me, I think it you're going to see some learning. This is going to be a teaching moment. I told some buddies on the forum, the board the other day, this might turn into a case study in a legal class one day about, you know, who could have imagined letting agents talk with, you know, lead high school kids, that this was going to be a good idea. And we're seeing more and more of it, the bad side of that, Trey. But this is the worst. You know, this is where tort reform, this is why this was made. You know, this is a ridiculous lawsuit. I just hate this side of college football. And I know this is part of it. I know that this is the part that the players wanted, and the NCAA just basically gave them the whole rule book and basically threw it away and said, let's just, you know, let everybody do what they want. That recruitment was just so slimy and so nasty. And I feel bad because it's going to cost coaches their jobs just because a kid either changed his mind or he didn't like something somebody said, or he may not have liked an offer from one school that he got an offer from another. If you're using offers against each other, schools and offers against each other, you don't think stuff like this is going to happen? I would almost, knowing enough that I do know, this is probably going to get settled. And that's just to save money. But if this went to trial, I would love to see the aftermath. I would love to see exactly how this was ruled. You know, give us something to as a frame of reference. You know, let this be the starting off point of how you negotiate and how you don't negotiate. I just don't like this side of college football. There's not a lot of these stories. That's why I'm not usually negative on this side of it. There's not a lot of these stories, but when you do see them, and there's a couple in every cycle, and when you do see them, you know instantly this is not going to end well at all. And usually the player goes to multiple schools, multiple places at multiple times, and you have to wonder, he's in Georgia now, you know, and he's on the bench, and you got to wonder if this is their last gasp at getting money. You know, that you have to wonder is what's Rashada's NFL career look like? Because if he's not going to play and it's not very promising, this might be the last opportunity that family has to cash out. And so that's where we're at in college athletics, Trey. And it's slimy, it's cringy, and I just wish it was the other way.
It is interesting that they're throwing Miami under the bus in this lawsuit. Look, I'm not showing sympathy on Miami. Miami was one of the first schools to flagrantly spend – quote unquote NIL money to lure kids in the transfer portal to South Florida. But Miami supposedly was going to pay the kid between $8 and $9 million, and then Florida ups that offer to nearly $14 million. Interestingly, though, they didn't provide the amount that Arizona State likely paid him to go play in Arizona last year. Now he's with Georgia, and we don't have that financial number either. But we also knew, even when things were set up a few years ago, that it was supposed to be all about name, image, and likeness. This is inevitably where things were going to head, and it's why you see the NCAA trying to settle these antitrust lawsuits, which may happen as soon as tomorrow, at least an agreement from the NCAA and its member institutions, to allow schools to spend up to $22 million per year on its college athletes, because they essentially let this happen without any sorts of guardrails in place. And you have kids being money whipped to go to a school out of high school or go from one school to another in the transfer portal. So inevitably something like this was going to happen. I guess it shouldn't be surprising that it is Jaden Rashada and his family, because this thing was a mess back when it was happening.
Yep. Yeah. This thing was, it stunk from the head up. Like this was not a good recruitment to begin with. And again, this is not the norm. A lot of these deals, I feel like go off a lot better, a lot more solid. But man, at the end of the day, it's just the downside of it. You know, I wonder at the end of the day if Rashada was promised an opportunity to start at Georgia next year. Because, you know, obviously Carson Beck's the incumbent. He's going to be one of the first picks in the draft in 2025. He's going to have a great year. I think Georgia could win the national championship with him. And so he goes to the draft in 2025. What happens if Rashada is not the starter? Well, then he's going to go to another team. Yeah. And then he'll probably try to get another check. And it's going to have like a Tate Martell vibe to it. Before you know it, the kid's going to be at five or six schools. You're not going to know what position he plays. I think Martell changed positions a few times, bless his heart. You just, like I said, it's just the negative side of NIL. And listen, you said, you know, kids are getting money whipped. Parents, are getting money whipped. I'm going to tell you right now, these kids understand some of these numbers and some of these factors. They don't know it like their parents do. And the parents that have everything lined up, they don't let money be a factor. They really don't. And I'm going to give you an example. You think Arch Manning picked Texas because of NIL? Because if you do, you're very ignorant. You don't pay attention to basic comprehension, and you don't, you just don't understand. You don't know about it. You cannot base it off these off money factors and things of that sort. Go get paid. Get that NIL. Get that opportunity. But when it becomes the deciding factor, that does not help your locker room. That helps you. And at the end of the day, if he can't even find a spot to play, what's his NFL future going to look like when he has only has tape from his freshman year in Tempe, Arizona?
Exactly. You know, talking about the Texas program, you and I have discussed in the past Steve Sarkisian and his coaches really looking at the structure that a kid comes from and deciding as to whether or not he is a take. He should be a member of the football team. You don't need to name names, obviously, but have there been situations where they see kids and they see family trying to create a sort of bidding war between Texas and another school, and they're like, you know what? We already see the level of drama that you're bringing to the table here. Regardless of the talent, this is not worth it for us.
Yes, yes. Just a few weeks, not even a week ago, defensive linemen from the portal outpricing themselves. They knew that the demand was going to be higher than the supply, which that's the nature of business. The market will always correct itself. But at some point, when they keep coming back for more and they essentially ask for money that they in no way, shape, or form have earned or deserved, you see some schools go, you know what? You can go ahead. You know what? We got, you know, I think Sark is so good about maintaining the culture. And I think that's why he's so particular on who he brings in from the portal. These recruits, most of them are in early enrollees, self-driven, self-focused kids. But the portal ones are the ones you really watch because they either want to get one more check before they get a chance to go to the NFL, or they want to get film so they actually have a chance to get to the NFL. They want that, you know, one more opportunity. And I see it all the time where parents and you know what? It's not always parents. It's handlers. It's the uncles. It's the brokers. It's the trainers. It's the agents that really aren't qualified to give that advice and to really put kids in. Because I'm telling you, there are agents out there telling kids to get in the portal because they know once he's in the portal, if another team wants him, they're more than likely going to get an offer. But what if they don't? And I'll tell you what, this is the funniest part. In one of these examples in the last couple of weeks, Texas lost a player from the portal to a rival school who wound up overspending to get him, which is great. They landed him. He's going to enroll. He'll play for them this year. But it hurt them with the other recruits and portal kids because now they didn't have any more funds. So now they were leading for all of these players in January, February, and March, these 2025 guys. And if you'll see, slowly, one after another is going away from Oklahoma because they now realize Oklahoma's not going to be able to pick up the tab on NIL. And so there's so many factors and angles you got to look at. Parents outbidding each other, programs backing off, going all in. Every recruitment's different, but man, it sure does get slimy towards the end with some of these guys.
Great answer there. He is Justin Wells of Inside Texas, InsideTexas.com, the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Follow him on Twitter at JustinWells2424 and hear him on this radio show for a couple of segments, typically on Wednesdays. Justin, thank you as always for the time, my friend.
Nothing but love, Trey.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, I have the most Canada story that you will possibly hear today.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of today's show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is time for your daily look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. We start today's Where Are We At with the most Canada story that I have come across maybe all year long, maybe in a couple of years. I'll go ahead and read you the headline. Ambulance collides with moose while responding to another moose collision. According to Ontario Police, an ambulance collided with a moose early Sunday as it responded to another crash, also involving a moose. The first crash was reported just after 1 a.m. on Highway 60 near T Lake in Algonquin Park. A vehicle struck a moose, left the roadway, and then hit a tree. Quote, one of the two Muskoka Paramedic Service ambulances responding to the scene also then collided with a moose. Police added that the ambulance was extensively damaged, but thankfully nobody was injured. Two people were injured in the initial crash, one of whom was reported to have life-threatening injuries, unfortunately. Both victims were taken to a hospital in Huntsville before the critically injured victim, a 40-year-old woman, was transferred to a Toronto trauma center. The other victim, a 45-year-old man, stayed in Huntsville and was reported to be in stable condition. OPP, that would be the Ontario Police, said the officers responding to the first collision had also just finished investigating another crash between a car and a moose, but there was no serious injuries in that incident. The OPP warns motorists that an increasing number of moose have been coming out of the forest and onto roads, particularly in the area of Algonquin Park, in an effort to escape from swarming insects. Please observe posted speed limits in order to ensure that you have adequate reaction and keep your eyes on the road and ditches ahead. Oh, and stop by Tim Hortons if you have the time to. That's the only thing that could have made this story more Canada than it already is. The fact that it's 1 a.m., you assume that there's probably some drinking involved. Again, assumption on my part. But Canada is a people that likes their adult beverage to go along with that Tim Hortons coffee. Sometimes they combine the two. And yeah, there are a lot of moose in Canada. Or mooses. Yeah, it's moose. I was right the first time. Moving on now. From Canada to weddings. Did you know that there is a growing movement in the world of weddings that asks patrons to not have their phones out during the ceremony? I gotta say, this is one of those stories that gives us a little bit hope that all is not lost, as I talk about at the beginning of each Where Are We At in Society segment. That's right, Gen Zers and millennials are making a stronger push to keep people present during the ceremony and not have their phones out. Not to take pictures, not to answer text messages, certainly. Not to take video either. Hey, we got you covered. Just sit and enjoy the ceremony. And according to this New York Post article, the reason why no phone mandates are starting to pop up at weddings is because baby boomers can't help themselves. That's right. Boomers are the problem here. According to a recent report from Zola, which is a wedding planning and registry platform, 75% of those surveyed who are getting married in 2024 are planning to have an unplugged ceremony. It's fascinating that boomers are the culprit here, although I do know a fair number of boomers who have a hard time keeping their eyeballs off of their phones. From The Guardian, younger generations actually understand phone etiquette in a way that older generations don't. Baby boomers, especially family, want to make sure everything is documented. But let's be honest, as is the case at that concert you attend, or that sporting event that you're at, or anywhere else where you're pulling your phone out to get a picture or a video, it doesn't even turn out all that good. 99% of the time. Congratulations if you're in that 1% in a situation, but just enjoy the moment. Be present. Certainly at a wedding, look, you got to have faith in the bride and the groom that they have hired a decent photographer or videographer to take care of all this stuff. You can pull the phone back out at the reception. Just leave the phone in your pocket or your purse while two people are reciting their vows to one another. Shouldn't be that difficult. Then again, my wife and I got married in St. Thomas, and we hired a videographer. And so we were living in Chicago at the time, drink up. Well, we get the video and the pictures from him a couple months later. We choose not to watch them until our 1 year anniversary, and we pop the DVD in to see the footage that he provided us. There was an error in the DVD. We reach out to the guy. Hey, do you still have a copy of our wedding? Because guess what? You screwed up the first time. His response was no, unfortunately. So we lost that. So I guess if you go the videographer route, just make sure the videographer has done the proper work and that they're holding on to the raw copy of whatever it is they put together for you until you have a chance to check that DVD, and don't wait until the 1 year anniversary. There's my wedding advice for you if you're listening right now and you were hoping to get wedding advice on today's show. It's not great advice. You're right. Should have done it much sooner than we did, but it's still the lesson we had to learn nonetheless. Did you hear that Kobayashi is retiring from competitive eating? That's right. The Japanese eating legend who won 6 consecutive Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contests is retiring from all future food challenges because he no longer has the hunger to compete. The 46-year-old Kobayashi announced his retirement in a new Netflix documentary, Hack Your Health, The Secrets of Your Gut, after doctors discovered his brain had become repelled by highly processed foods. But in recent years, Kobayashi says his appetite started to wane, and he now never feels hunger at all. He once went 3 days without eating. Quote, when you eat too much, you lose the ability to smell the food. You also ignore signals from your body, such as feeling full. I don't think you can call Kobayashi the GOAT. Maybe he's the Kobe Bryant of food competitions, because Joey Chestnut is the GOAT, correct? Right about that, right? I don't follow these things closely. I just know that Joey Chestnut has won a lot more than Kobayashi. I'm not even looking that up. I'm just telling you that is the fact. Do you remember what you did for your 40th birthday? I remember what I did for my 40th birthday. My wife and I, this would have been 6 years ago, we went to San Francisco because not only was it my 40th birthday, but it was also our 5-year wedding anniversary. Went to San Francisco, a place that I have fond memories. Unfortunately, that city has fallen into disrepair. And even though we did enjoy ourselves, we also saw up close and personal why that city has become a steaming pile of you-know-what. There's actually an online map showing you where to not go to avoid a lot of human number two on the roads. But we went to San Francisco for my 40th birthday, and it was a fun time. Everybody celebrates these things a little bit different. And I'm guessing that Mark Zuckerberg had a cooler 40th birthday party than, well, I know he had a cooler one than I did, but I'm guessing he had a cooler one than you did too. Mark Zuckerberg, the boss at Facebook/Meta, reportedly flew to Panama in Central America to celebrate his 40th birthday, where he got to board his brand new $300 million super yacht. The 387-foot-long vessel is called the Launchpad. And even though he has never publicly confirmed that he is the owner of Launchpad, Well, people put two and two together. Launchpad also has a smaller companion vessel called Wingman, and both were docked in Panama on the same day. 300 million dollar super yacht. Just seeing pictures of it right now. And yeah, it is. I mean, it's $300 million. Of course, it's better than my house. Swimming pool, helipad, observation decks. I'm sure there's all sorts of bedrooms in here, too. This thing is massive. Looks like a small hotel. And that's where Mark Zuckerberg got to celebrate his 40th birthday. Beats the hell out of TGI Fridays on a Saturday night, even with all the flair. All right, that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back tomorrow at 6. That will likely include an update on the NCAA's antitrust suit settlement. All of that comes due tomorrow, so we'll know for sure one way or another. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.